This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Keenan Davis has stolen away from him. Watkins is in the middle. So to Trezeguet! Trezeguet turns it on its head!
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Thank you for joining us for the return of Aston Villa and maybe the return of the Villa of the late 2020s. Well, for 10 minutes anyway. Joining me to discuss a bizarre game, I think you have to say, where it was literally an Easter Sunday resurrection within 90 minutes. Mr. Chris Budd, welcome.
Hello.
Or Mr. Budman.
Mr. Budman, indeed. Say. Hello. Happy Easter.
Thank you very much. And same to you. And also, Mr. Phil Shawman, welcome back.
Hello. Happy Easter to everybody as well.
Thank you.
Thanks,
sorry, I'm still in shock.
Thanks, Phil, man.
No. I just love that the Fulham player Luckman's name. I just think it's great at half time when like Scott Parker's there going, Luckman. I find it funny anyway. So somehow, after 70 minutes of the most dire football we've seen at Villa Park since Paul Lambert, Black Sabbath's Paranoid rang out three times within the space of 10 minutes as we flipped the game on the head, and Villa somehow managed to, for the second time this season, win without Mr. Grealish, who we'll talk about later on. How's your Easter been and your international break?
It's been all right. Productive week of work. Nice to get a break from the Villa. And the sun came out. Hurrah.
Feel sure anything more exciting than Bud?
No, it's been a depressing week for sport over here.
Ah, yes. we didn't want to mention.
We'll just leave it there. I mean, football, boxing.
What's the nationality of the boxer that beat Frampton?
Ah, yeah, American. he was a Marine. He shouldn't be allowed to box.
What's the nationality of that football team that beat Northern Ireland?
Yeah, enough.
I actually had my vaccine, or the first jab, a few days ago. No side effects, although you do feel it flowing through your veins for the first couple of days. So if you are having it, it's good to drop paracetamol every so often just to keep it in check. And that is a public health statement. So now let's continue with the show. Coming up in the Villa News, where we add on to what we did in the Something for the Weekend, which is the new show we're putting out on Fridays, which comes in around about a quarter of an hour just to catch up and add on to this show, whatever has happened throughout the week before Villa's next game. After the Villa News, we go into the 3 points. We talk about the reintroduction of fans in a scientific experiment.
Ooh.
The recent Qatar World Cup human rights protests. And then Marco van Basten's madman, a genius idea to change football.
I like
before
it.
It's interesting. Yeah, before going into the Fulham game and then finishing on a underrated or overrated with Mr. Zat Knight. And stick around, folks, because I think it's one of the more funnier ones in terms of what he's been up to in recent times. So, right, where are we starting? Villa News?
Go for it.
First of all, Ezri Konsa signs a new deal, keeping him, hopefully, to Aston Villa until 2026. I think his upturn in form, which started in Project Restart, really, I think we've seen a different player since then, and has made a big contribution to the 14 clean sheets Villa have had so far this season. I don't know if there was real danger of losing him this summer, to be honest. You know, it's just there was no offers or no real firm interest, I don't think.
I mean, there's always going to be interest, but I think Villa wouldn't be wanting to sell it. They don't have to, so I think he's probably quite happy here.
Oh, what a coincidence. 1 week there's some just random newspaper talk like Liverpool and Spurs, and then the next week is a new contract. Sometimes these stories are, let's say, come out from the agent to the players just to force the issue when you're sitting around the table and negotiating. But anyway, surely they're not that cynical. Meanwhile, Mr. Wesley has suffered a bit of a hiccup to his recuperation after managing to play a chunk of time in the Behind Closed Doors game. It was against the Baggies, wasn't it?
Yes.
During the international break, he came off as, well, you know, with injury news from Villa Park nowadays, who knows what's going on. He was either taken off as a precaution, or he's out for another year. You decide on that one. But we'll soon know in the next week or so if he shows up again for the under-23s. I don't think this one's... I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I've written him off for this season.
He certainly won't be starting games, will he? But
no. Also, back, Mr. Emil Jedinak is at the club as a lone player development coach. He joins head of emerging talents Adam Henschel, who came in from Doncaster. That's a bit of a strange one, Jedinak, because I think he was a bit of a distant character from what I've been told in terms of mixing, you know, with the squad. But I think this is one where he's got young kids, hasn't he, that settled down in the area. So he's probably keen to stick around, and he's probably got a good setup here, family-wise, and house and everything. So that might, and obviously in these COVID times, that might be a reason why he decided to, well, let's get into coaching, let's do it at the Villa. The thing about Jedinak, if he wasn't one of the boys, it probably suits him to be in a figure of authority as a coach within a football club, because he does have that demeanour, doesn't he?
Well, he's
got the stare down anyway, doesn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
I think he's been in a position of, you know, leadership, hasn't he, for a long time. He's obviously very respected when he was at Palace and with the Australian national side. So,
well, he was a captain, wasn't he, at the Socceroos?
Well, and with Palace, yeah.
Yeah. Figures released last week show that Villa paid out $8.9 million on agent fees between February the 1st, 2020 and February the 1st, 2021. That's up $6.7 million on previous seasons. Surprisingly, because we were one of the biggest spenders, were we not, in the transfer windows? This is only the 12th highest spend in the Premier League. Chelsea are the highest with $35 million in agent fees in a total of $272 million. It's astounding, isn't it? That's
crazy.
It's like the wealth of a small nation or something, isn't it? The likes of Newcastle, Fulham, Wolves all actually had higher agent outlays than Villa. So I suppose in context, we've at least got some kind of value there.
You'd need to pay over the odds to go to Newcastle, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah. If you're Newcastle, you've got to bribe so many people to get a deal over the line. Meanwhile, the youth side are drawn at Burton Albion in the FA Youth Cup. If they win that, they play the winners of Newcastle versus Leeds or Watford in the quarterfinals. And finally, it's red alert time, people, as the Villa women's team slip in to that solitary relegation spot in the Women's Super League after their fifth defeat on the trot, going down 3-1 to Everton. Now they're in the bottom with games running out. So I think they've got two games in hand on Bristol City, and they have to play them in the final week of April. They've also got to play the Birmingham Women's, West Ham. These are the games probably got their best chance of points in. I think they've got to beat Bristol City. That's the starting point. Right, 3 points. So as we're starting to transition back to mixing again in society, we are now entering the rule of six.
It's a sellout at St Andrews, isn't it?
Yeah, no, exactly. There's a what are they? It's been billed as like a scientific.
It's like a research program. Yeah, it's a research program that they're running, aren't they, with the government?
I like to call it scientific experiment. But the FA Cup semi-final, final and League Cup final will be part of this. What's the semi-final looking at? Is that the 4,000 one?
Yes. The semi-final is Leicester-Southampton on 18th of April.
And this is going to be like locals, NHS workers,
yeah,
etc.
4,000 local residents will be allowed to
I wonder
attend.
If there'll be named tickets, because football fans will be, the black market would
be fighting over
them, and the NHS, after, not being happy with their pay rise, will be on the black market like a shot trying to sell those tickets.
And then it goes up to 21,000, I believe, for the final. It's 8,000 for the League Cup final at the end of April. So they're kind
of building Manchester City and Spurs. There's been a bit of talk behind the scenes about trying to make it fair for Manchester City fans, because they said they're going to try to get a decent proportion of tickets to actual City or Spurs fans. I mean, that's going to be a shit show, isn't it?
It's bad enough when we get 40,000 for a playoff final with people arguing over tickets. Imagine them trying to get a couple of thousand.
Just waiting for the meltdown whenever Liam Gallagher doesn't get a ticket.
And Noel does.
It'll be interesting to see where this kind of vaccination passport qualification comes in, because that will suddenly cut out a lot of younger people, if that's the case, in terms of if you have to have had vaccination for it. Mm-hmm. Later on this week, I will be attending a Villa fan consultation group meeting, and we will be talking about the possibility of the Villa versus Chelsea game on the last day of the season. So we will have more information on what's likely to happen there. Right, Qatar World Cup, human rights protests. We've seen it from the Norwegian team. I think Norwegian fans are also trying to push the Norwegian FA in terms of actually boycotting it. Also, the German national team wore some powerful message T-shirt. It just said human rights across the front, didn't it?
Yeah.
Each player had a different letter.
And I believe the Dutch did as well, didn't they? The Dutch lads did a protest as well.
Yep, England would never do that. But essentially protesting against the reported 6,500 migrant workers that died. For me, this is a bit shutting the stable door after the horses bolted, because, I mean, the Qatari government are saying the morality rate amongst the communities is within the expected range for the size and demographics of the population. It's like, what do you mean? It's like building a stadium. There's inevitably going to be fatalities. I don't think so. But people are forgetting about how Qatar won this bid. And funny enough, I've got this article that I remember buying the newspaper, because it was I think it was the Telegraph's expose of how they did it. And it's 11 years ago. I don't know how this has managed to stay with me all that time. But, the bottom line is they had a PR campaign marketing budget of 50 to 100 million pounds. Compare that to England's 15. Well, this is England's in 2018, 15. Russia's was 19 million. Holland, Belgium's 6 million. And then for the Qatar one, I think Australia were the next biggest. They had a published budget of 28 million. So this is, going up to 100 million. And they were paying people $250,000 in gifts when they visited Qatar, like journalists or dignitaries. And then the Asian Football Confederation head, he had his rent paid for. The new headquarters had all their rent paid for by the Qatar state, and a grant to build a new building. There was a complex of 30 villas with swimming pools and all that kind of stuff, which were all given to this federation. The AFC, this is again the Asian Football Confederation president, was given a private jet, and he made 25 trips a year in it. He got a large size BMW. And all Lexus and another BMW for the vice president. So, the bribes, subtle bribes, presents have been mass. They're throwing so much money at this. And then not to have the money to provide basic care for all these migrant workers. And, as people, mention, it's almost akin to how the Egyptians built the pyramids back in the day. Anyway, but I can't see anything happening from an England point of view.
No chance.
Point number three, Marco van Basten says, scrap the offside rule. Now, people are calling him a madman. I mean, they've said he's ignorant. They said he's stupid, and both. He reasons, I'm still very curious about the offside rule. Now, this has kind of been one of the roots of all evil in terms of the application of VAR. It's, you know, VAR is VAR. It's a device. But the offside rule, handball rule, has been made so complicated that nobody knows what's going on. And this is what's really short-circuited VAR in terms of how effective it can be. Van Basten says, I am still very curious about the offside rule because I'm convinced that it's not a good rule. At least I would like to trial it to show that football is also possible without the offside rule. I am convinced that football would be better without it. Football is a fantastic game. I think that we have to do much more to make it better, more spectacular, more interesting, more exciting. We have to work on that. He's also talking about effective playing time, you know, the clock being stopped, like, you know, basketball. When the ball goes out of play, because that gets rid of time wasting and makes the game a bit more honest.
And like rugby, where they stop the clock, I think that's a really good idea.
So I think it'd be funny in pre-season if the Premier League just says, right, next season, no offside rule, good luck.
Well, it's back to being like in the playground, isn't it? Playing football, just goal hanging and everything else. It's most enjoyable football I remember playing in the playground. Just standing there hoping it hit you and went in.
But seriously, philosophically speaking, what would it do to the game? It would be it would completely change the dynamic, and it would be the first management team that would sit down in those weeks and just kind of played out every potentiality. Because, you know, Pep's systems may be defunct instantly. And his approach to the game, Allardyce may turn into the best manager in football because of this no offside rule.
Well, the days of teams playing with like a high line, I mean, that'd be out the window straight away, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And like, I'm just waiting for the 35 assists Mings gets a season when he hits a long ball up front. Would have three or four, just by a couple more people like Ollie Hawkins.
And the re-emergence of the old school English number nine, where everyone's got a 6'5" centre forward.
But it would be interesting because, I mean, what the good news would be you wouldn't see any of this nonsense that's I think, when did it start? Was it Di Matteo, when Villa would defend without anybody up front? You know, there would be nobody on the halfway line.
Yeah.
Everybody would be in the 18-yard box. We could just leave somebody up in their 6-yard box.
And someone on the halfway line and just give them a few things to think about.
Yeah, no, exactly.
It'd be fun to watch just as a one-off game. I think it'd be brilliant.
Yeah, no, as I said, I think the Premier League, just to make next season more interesting and throw everybody off the guard, 1 week to go, by the way, announcement, new rules, no offside rule, good luck. No handball, no handball either.
We're going to sack off the lines as well.
Good luck.
Murder ball.
You can play off the wall. You can play off the advertising boards like in five-a-side.
Just see what happens. I think that's the kind of football we need. That's the kind of drastic.
Man. Taking throw-ins from the upper tier, that'd be good from a bit of elevation on your throw-in.
Put it in the cage.
Yeah. Like Royal Rumble.
I mean, that game against Fulham, which we'll get onto, until we went goal crazy at the end, it was turgid stuff. And the only thing that was saving it was the fake crowd noise. Right, anyway, let's talk about the game, shall we? I think we're at that stage. We went into this game, we hadn't done a double over them for a long time, hadn't we?
09-10, wasn't it? Which was like pretty much the last year of O'Neill's reign.
Yeah, and to make up for the playoff defeat, we really had to double them this season and help them to go back to the Championship. Was, if you wanted to be mean about it, was how I was looking at it.
Well, 6-1 on aggregate's not bad.
Yeah, I'm happy enough to double them every season for that.
Yeah, and Fulham were looking, I mean, the opportunity was knocking. 8 games to go, that kind of focuses the mind when you're in the relegation spots. Newcastle did well to get a draw against Spurs, but ultimately, if Fulham had beaten Villa, they'd have got out the bottom three, which psychologically would have been a real knee in the nuts for Bruce and the Toon Army. The big thing going into the game was Grealish going to play or not? It quickly became apparent on social media that there had been some kind of setback, and you kind of, when news gets through now, as I've mentioned about Villa injury news, you just kind of roll your eyes now, because I had a hunch that Grealish might not be playing, just because some of the things that Smith was saying, that he's back and, he seems to be almost 100%. He didn't seem very super bullish, was he? He was like, oh yeah, Jack wants to play. But it wasn't like, oh yeah, he's back, underlined.
Yeah, he hasn't said that he's trained well and he's looking forward to the game or anything. It was all a bit like, we'll wait and see how he is. And
so it seems that he pulled up in the first 10 minutes of the last training session, and they obviously kept that under wraps to keep Scott Parker guessing. Although, you know, if certain Villa fans like myself weren't convinced he was playing, I don't think Scott Parker's 100% convinced. And I'm not a manager of the opposition, so I'm not actively trying to find out, which I'm sure Parker would have at least had an ear to the ground. So I think it's got to that line, isn't it, where... Yes, you understand if you know a player's almost there and he's either going to be back this week or the next week that you keep the opposition guessing. But Villa, I mean, in the latest example was with Barkley. They try to stretch it out literally over a month. And ultimately, I don't think it works as a strategy, because the opposition manager, they probably know when a player's not playing or not. And in this case, if you think he's going to play and then suddenly he's not on the team sheet, you're thinking, happy days, he's not playing. And it gives the opposition a boost. And it does nothing more than deflate the Villa first 11.
I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, psychologically, as soon as you see the team sheet and you know that Newcastle are playing Spurs, where you're going to fancy your rival in Newcastle to probably drop points, you're thinking, this is a big opportunity today.
Yeah. I always remember Alan Hansen, once upon a time, you know, in the 80s, Liverpool with this great team, as United became, and then, you know, others have followed. When Liverpool started to decline, you know, he said you'd look at the Liverpool team sheet once upon a time and the opposition would just, you know, shit their pants basically and be beaten before they got on the pitch. But then you start to see, I think he said this after Villa beat them 4-2 when Rosenthal made that miss. You look at that Liverpool team, the team sheet now, and you don't fear it anymore. And this is the thing, Grealish isn't there. You're like, we should win this. These are there for the taking. Mid-table Villa, no Grealish. So, and it frustrates fans. Anyway, so in terms of how do you compensate again for Grealish, I think the thinking was it was El Ghazi was going to play, potentially even if Grealish was playing, because he'd scored a couple of goals in the behind-closed-door game against West Brom, and Traore and Trezeguet had obviously come off trips back from Africa. So potentially, you know, you're looking at El Ghazi to start anyway. But in the end, I thought it was a bit of a surprise that Sanson started. Any qualms with the starting 11?
No, I think if I was of the school of thought that if Grealish played, Barkley might play with him. I think obviously knowing that Jack probably wasn't going to play the day before would have meant they probably had to switch their, well, clearly they had to switch their selection. But I mean, I think it would have maybe changed the overall landscape and then maybe slotted Sanson in accordingly. I think Smith had said that, you know, we're still trying to get Barkley up to full fitness, which seems to be taking a staggeringly long time.
Well, he almost made a point of mentioning that when they weren't actually talking about Barkley. This is after the game. He slipped that one in as if he was making an excuse for Barkley.
But in terms of, you know, I think the back four and keeper, if everyone's fit, pretty much picks itself. I thought Luiz would play. I was glad to see McGinn play, you know, in a more advanced role. I think if Traore's fit, he probably plays on the right, as I think as you've said numerous times, he's your wild card, and Watkins plays. So really, you're only necessarily picking for two positions, aren't you?
Yeah, and you know, straight into the game, and we're not going to dwell on the first 70
minutes, which was shit.
But the first thing noticeable, as you touched on, McGinn was playing very much as a number 10 off the leash, as Smith said, which is something that you know, any fan with one eye has been saying, at least one eye has been saying, that should have been done, you know, weeks ago.
Yeah, and he was certainly far more involved in the game than he has been as well. I mean, further up the pitch, he was getting the ball, he was breaking things up high up the pitch, and he was driving at the full defence. He had a couple of early shots, but they were high and wide, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think some of his shooting, it was almost like he had it in his head, right, I'm going to be the driving force here. So some of the shots, they're almost like warning shots, if you know what I mean, because there were better options on. But I think because he was kind of hyped up and, you know, rightly so, confident from what happened in the week before for Scotland. 45 minutes, again, no shot on target from Villa. And there's some, what's the stats around that?
Wasn't it the fourth game on the spin that Villa hadn't had at home, that Villa hadn't had a shot on target in the first half?
Yeah, at Villa Park, which can you imagine being supporters? Easter Sunday, sunny, beautiful day. It would be a great game to go. And imagine this is the fourth time you haven't seen a shot in the first half. You start to get a bit frustrated. And I'm sure there'd have been at least 5,000 or so who would have gone off on by 80 minutes before the fireworks kicked in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, first incident. And it's almost like when this happened, you're kind of not fighting that much for it because you just think, well, you don't bloody deserve it anyway. Was the penalty when Watkins gets a touch to the ball, but the defender also touches the ball like in a significant touch before there's contact made with Watkins. And when I saw it, I just thought, I don't think that's a penalty. But the ref gave a penalty, and you're thinking, oh, that's, you know, it's kind of what we need, and it's a bit of luck. And maybe we can get a shot on target through a penalty. I wasn't even thinking about scoring it. I was just thinking, oh, we've got a chance to get a shot on target.
Yeah, it's another of those VAR ones. Is it a big enough mistake to go to VAR? I mean, it could have went either way. I mean, if the referee's in a position that he sees he thinks he sees the Fulham player getting the more dominant touch, then he doesn't give a penalty, but he didn't. He thought he'd seen Watkins getting the ball first, and I've seen it a few times myself. Depending on which side you look at it, you can't tell. So it's one of the, if you can't tell, why go to VAR again?
Yeah, but then again, I think if it's a penalty, most of them go to VAR anyway, don't they?
Yeah, they check them all, don't they, anyway?
Yeah, and as I said, my first look was, yeah, I don't think he's given that, because in terms of the context of football, you know, whoever's diving and what, take all the diving and how people have fallen and all that out of the equation. In the context of football, Watkins has touched the ball, but not really doing anything, and the player's actually tackled him. If I was a defender, I'm 100% saying, you know, I've got the ball there, 100%, and then what's after, it doesn't matter because the ball's... Watkins can't do anything with that ball because I've tackled him. So, yeah, I have no real qualms with that. But...
No, I mean, I said at the time, you know, I think you earn your bit of luck, your lucky breaks, don't you, sometimes by performing well, or, you know, you just deserve it. And Villa didn't deserve a lucky break, and Fulham didn't deserve that decision to go against them. So it's kind of, you just treat it, you know, pragmatically.
But when, and, you know, Bud, have you not noticed nobody lives in a world where you get what you deserve? Well, this is a world of injustice.
I think, do you know what? If the result hadn't gone our way, I think the reaction would be very different. The fact that we won in the end, you kind of, it's quite easy to just dust it off and go, yeah, well, whatever.
Yeah, no, I have no problems with that decision, to be honest.
To be honest, we've had far worse decisions go against us.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, we've had some crazy things happening. And this one, you know, there wasn't that many people going crazy.
I think you'd call it borderline.
In terms of the players either, they weren't going apeshit over it. The thing about this game, there were some great assists, and a great assist to kick it off was Mings's assist for the Fulham goal.
Right through ball, wasn't it? Perfect. Absolute picture perfect.
Yep. It's beautiful, beautiful. I mean, you know, Sanson, perhaps not the best weighted pass, but still, Mings, it was, you know, Mings's touch just, you know, was all over the place, wasn't it?
And if in doubt, and you don't fancy the back pass, you can just put your boot through it. I mean, Mings, you know it's going to go a long way.
Yeah, you can literally do anything.
But we keep saying that, but he never listens.
Well, he was for a few weeks, wasn't he? He was at Leeds. Yeah. And then Mitrovic is in form, you know, when he gets clean through, you think, well, he's going to score.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, Mitrovic is just thinking, fucking hell, happy Easter.
Yeah, I haven't scored in 21 games, so here we go. Play Villa, let's go.
Typical Villa, isn't it?
Fill your boots.
I mean, at the start of this game, I was thinking Fulham have certainly tightened up their defence. I mean, our defence has been good all season, but they've tightened up their defence. And you're just thinking, this is going to be, you know, turgid. Mitrovic hasn't scored for years. We're struggling to fashion shots on target. So when he scores, you're thinking, because Fulham were still on top after they went 1-0 up. And 75 minutes, you're just counting all these minutes until we've had an actual shot on goal. But the next key phase of the game, because not much else happened in that 75 minutes, was the changes. And I think I said at half time, we can't, you know, it's not just a like for like thing. We've got to bring two or three on in quick succession here and he's got to make tactical switches here. Smith has to respond to what's going on, because you can't have a team that's having these long patches without even a shot on target. I mean, that stops at the management, the coaching team, ultimately.
Well, yeah, if it's not working, you've got to change it. And to be fair, you know, he did it and it worked this time.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Because there was an incident where Sansom picked up a knee knock and Nakamba was warming up. This is in the first half. And you're thinking, actually, yeah, that's probably works because, you know, Sanson's been looking a bit lightweight, actually. You know, Ruben Loftus-Cheek just kind of...
swatted him off like a fly, mm-hmm. didn't he? I think Sanson likes playing with the ball, but he's not a ball winner.
Mm, French flea.
Ooh. Ooh, his nickname. So I thought, that enforced substitute, if Nakamba comes in, that actually might work to our favour. But the status quo kept, Sanson shook it off and on he carried on. But it was only a matter of time until he did get hooked. But actually, it was Alghazi, Trezeguet on for Alghazi, which was the first substitution. Then 5 minutes later, Davis came on for Sanson, and that pretty much changed the game, didn't it?
Yeah, they both came in and hit the ground running. It was great. You know, I mean, let's be fair to Trezeguet. You know, he has a knack of popping up and scoring important goals.
Ramsey also came on for Louise, who had been a bit of a passenger. But one thing you'll notice... Trezeguet, first of all, had to... he had a simple header. I mean,
had a header at the back post. You'd kind of hope you'd hit the target. You don't necessarily expect him to score, but you want to try and work the keeper.
Yeah, not the corner flag.
But, I mean, as we know from Trezeguet, he needs to harness the hatred on social media to charge up his shooting boots. As we found out last season, the more shit you give him, the more powerful and more accurate his shooting becomes. Because within minutes later, bing, bang, bosh, we're 2-1 up.
Yeah,
all Villa three goals, all the assists were showed the kind of urgency and dynamicness that we'd been missing for weeks.
Yeah, I mean, the first one, obviously, Mings finds himself in a rare position in the left back, you know, position, a little bit of interchange with, I think it was Matty Target, making amends for his earlier mistake. Great ball
redemption.
In across, yeah, you know, sort of a quick ball across the face of the penalty area.
And kind of fired in.
Yeah, it's hit, mm-hmm. it's hit at pace. And Trezeguet thinking, you know, maybe take a touch, but he's in space. Hits it first time and the keeper's completely wrong-footed. It's a brilliant finish.
Yeah.
And then the second one...
is what you hope that Davis could do on a regular basis.
Absolutely, David. This is, you know, you said if you want Davis to use his physicality and then... And we've seen it before when he gets his head down and actually drives. He's very hard to stop, isn't he?
He's got speed as well, hasn't he? Quick. He's got some pace.
He's one of those guys who's not nippy over 5 yards, but once he gets up to speed, he's very hard to stop and he, you know, gets the ball on the halfway line, drives towards goal, puts a great ball into the back stick, and it's another great finish from Trezeguet. Two really well-crafted goals. And at that point, you've turned the game on your head and you think, right, get another one here and you've killed the game.
It's Project Restart all over again. It's like the swinging 20s or whatever. It's swinging 60s.
Roaring 20s.
Roaring 20s, swinging 60s and Project Restart all roll into one.
I mean, Trezeguet, I mean, he's missed some absolute howlers, but I mean, the mental character to still actually be a footballer after some of the ones he's missed, it's just unflappable. He just comes back and then... Final 10 games of the season, it's time for Trez to turn up, and that's what he did.
It's a great stat for you on him. But, you know, before the two goals against Fulham, he'd had more shots than any player in the Premier League and not scored. He'd had 29 shots without a goal.
Yeah, that's just the season, isn't it?
Yeah. He had the most in the league of any player who's had shots and not scored.
Were 8 of those in one game?
Yeah, probably against Brighton, and then two and, you know, scores inside a couple of minutes. And then, of course, you know, Traore with some great approach play for the third, great ball to the back post, and Watkins, you know, can't miss. Three really well constructed goals, really well finished. Job well done. And was it 3 goals in 9 minutes? I think it was.
It was good to see, Troy getting 90 minutes. That's kind of rarity. But also, if he's, you know, if he's still in the game on 90 minutes, he has got the trickery that can bedazzle tired legs.
Well, he always has a moment in him, doesn't he, in most games? I mean, he normally has one of his howlers in terms of one of his ridiculous crossfield balls that he tends to always shank one of them, which he did again. But he always has a tendency to make something happen. I mean, and the fact, you know, the fact that we've turned a game on its head for the first time this year is a big, that's a big breakthrough moment. The players will take a lot of credit from that, especially when they were playing so shit for 70 minutes. To turn the game on its head when, frankly, it didn't look like they were going to at all. It wasn't like they'd been knocking on the door for a while and finally got their reward. You've got to give them credit for that.
Well, it's only a few seasons ago in the Championship, we were like the masters of coming back from losing positions. And we've become a bit fluffy and lightweight in terms of having any resolve or tenacity about us. Although at 3-1, when Jos Onnemar came on, I thought, oh shit, it's going to be 4-3 to Fulham, isn't it?
And then he had a great chance, didn't he, and fluffed his lines.
Yeah, the danger man, Jos Onnemar. But yeah, he was like the poor. Was he? He's like a Primark Dele Alli, isn't he?
Yeah, pretty much.
He never really flourished. I suppose he was going on loan at Villa that pretty much finished off his career.
Yeah,
put him back 20 years.
So, you know, Daniel Levy only thinks he's 3 million less than Jack Grealish's value. So,
also, it's the first time we've scored. Correct me if I'm wrong. Scored more than one goal in a game since the Burnley defeat.
Yeah. And actually, Trezeguet is only the third Villa substitute to score twice in a Premier League game.
So, upshot, coming out of that game, bearing in mind it's against one of the bottom three, they've lost, what is it, three out of the last four games, even though they've been on...
They've had a good run.
Better form, and I think they're 8 unbeaten away from home. They've kept 4 clean sheets in the last 6 games away from home as well. So, and as I've been saying, they'd have been focused for this game as a potential, honing in on it as a potential 3-pointer, especially when they saw Grealish not there. How do you view this game in terms of how Villa are sitting? Because I was looking at that performance until the triple goal bonanza, thinking this is lower mid-table finish this season, and it still may well be because it's not going to get any easier. Is the 9 minutes glossing over a concern?
No, well, not for me anyway, because I think that's the mindset sort of we'll have to get out of, because Man United have done that for years, played rubbish for 70 minutes and then scored 3. Yeah, papering over the cracks is something that, enjoy a win like this. I mean, that's the first thing I saw, people say, oh, papering over the cracks, it was rubbish before that. And I was, yeah, so what? It was, but then we turned around, papering over the cracks might have been, or papering
the craps.
Yeah, the craps.
I mean, it craps.
Yeah, papering over those might have been only snatching a draw or something. We went and scored 3 and won the game. So, enjoy this. This is, move on to the next one.
It's pretty
game.
Clinical as well.
Because there has been, if you look back at right at the start of the season, there is this kind of clinical edge to Villa, which is in the tank, but we lost the key to release it in pretty much the last 3 months. So is it, if it's a mindset and that's triggered back and there's the belief flows back through the veins, then it could be good things. Well, especially if, Mr. Grealish turns up again. And coming back onto that, I didn't like the sound of this. Oh, he's off for a scan. Because if it's just a minor setback, you're thinking, well, it looks like Liverpool then. But this looks like that last season in the Championship where he disappeared for 3 months when we thought he'd gone a couple of weeks.
Well, if it is the supposed shin splints that people have been talking about and you're having a scan, that'll be to make sure it's not become a stress fracture.
Yeah, and also, people are coming up with any excuse to batter Southgate. Oh, yeah, he's not going to bring Grealish into the team. Oh, yeah, it's not Southgate. The situation is Grealish is fucking injured. And as we've seen before, this kind of mysterious shin injury lasts months rather than a couple of weeks. So the worst time you want to be dipping out of the England squad is their last, their last games before the tournament, i.e., when they've just gone away last week. So this one is, this is about this injury. If Grealish wants to go to the Euros, it isn't about Southgate. He needs to be fit and he needs to be playing games for Villa, because he can't just turn up after not doing anything in the last 9 games for Villa if he's not, if he's not going to play most of them.
No, unfortunately, he's not like, back in the day with David Beckham or Rooney had these really high profile metatarsal injuries where you're like, right, as long as they're fit, even if they've had no preparation, they're going to play.
As long as he's got a pulse.
They're going to play.
Yeah, we'll bring him to the knockout games.
Yeah, he won't make that kind of call.
Because also, he's got plenty of talent to choose from. So it's not as if he's on his knees praying every night that Grealish is fit, because he's got loads of people. So it's up to it's on the fitness side of things. And when Smith said after the game, oh, he's going to have a scan and we're going to see where we're at, it's like, hang on a minute, you should know really already where he's at. I mean, he was training. I think there was a bit of pain there, but I don't think he's going to be there for Liverpool, put it that way. As soon as I heard the word scan, I thought, yeah, we know how they like to err on the side of caution, as he keeps saying.
Or like the team have been recently, but I just think if they don't need to risk him, they won't. In terms of just my final point on the game, to win a game in that manner, as Phil said, you'll take a lot of momentum from that. It's like snatching a last-minute winner or a last-minute equaliser or something. It's one of those things that can actually give you a bit of momentum, which, frankly, we haven't had since right at the start of the calendar year. And hopefully, you know, winning it in that manner will kind of give them the belief that actually, do you know what, when we need to turn it on, we can turn it on and we can get the job done.
Yeah, but look at the next fixtures. I think it hits a wall there. I always remember under Lambert when we went to Anfield and we just ripped them a new one. It's when Benteke scored via him and we were doing all those back heelers and played them off the park, and it was astonishing. And you think, here we go, finally. And the next game against Everton, it was atrocious. I think we got beat 3-0.
Probably. Sounds about right.
And we were terrible. And it's like, how can you go from that to that?
Then Chelsea put eight passes, wasn't it, in the same sort of fixture?
Yeah. It's like, how can you go? I don't know if that was in the same time.
We got battered a couple of times by Chelsea, didn't we, under Lambert?
But you were thinking, you know, and we've had that moment many times, especially in that era when you win a game or you win two games and you think, right, this is the turning point. But there doesn't seem to be continuity, weirdly. But in this one, I just think if we had this turning point three or four games ago, because we've had a reasonably, you know, we've had to play the likes of Newcastle and Sheffield United, then I think you can build on the turning point and turn it into a turning point and get momentum. But when you've got to go straight in against Liverpool, who I don't think they'll be looking to lose seven league games on the Anfield when we come to town after we've beaten them 7-2 earlier on in the season. I don't think they've forgotten about that.
No, I'm just hoping that the fact that they've got Real Madrid either side of the Villa game may or may not make a difference in terms of their focus and selection. But with the selection issues they've had in terms of injuries and stuff, I don't think they can be making wholesale changes even if they wanted to.
Yeah, but overall, we've got to be more decisive like we were in those 9 minutes than that other 81 minutes. But in terms of the bigger picture, you want to see them playing like that. You want to see Traore doing that. You want to see, the credit to Mings. He could have sunken in his shell and...
But he never does.
Started thinking about the shit he's going to get after the game on social media and all that kind of stuff. But like Stones did in midweek, you're looking for redemption. And it happens quite a lot, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Like somebody scores an own goal, they normally go up the other end and score.
Yeah.
Because there is that drive for redemption, and it's good that Mings had it in his DNA.
It's good to see us, you know, even getting Watkins, like what he'd class as like gilt-edged chances in front of goal. Give him actual service and he will score goals. We know this.
Yeah, because, you know, there's a chance that he just bounced off his bloody shin or something, but he, you know, he'll be there if you get it to him.
Yeah.
And that is the big difference. It's better to get it to Watkins when he's standing unmarked on the edge of the six-yard box than to get it to Watkins when he's in the corner flag. Anyway, that's hopefully we continue that. We're just having a bit more cutting-edge urgency and intent, really. Right. Before we head off into the sunset, just want to say a big thank you to the My Old Man Said patrons as normal and all the patrons that tune in on Match Club. It never gets gloomy in Match Club because we've witnessed some crazy things and this turnaround against Fulham was the latest thing. But thank you very much to George Rose for signing up the other day to become a patron. Also, if you want to sign up for an annual subscription, you get 15% off, which is 2 months free. Go to myoldmansaid.com and check out the information via the patron link on the menu bar. And you become a patron, you get extra podcasts on the My Old Man Said patron podcast channel and access to Match Club. And there's another development in Match Club, which we will be bringing you soon. Right, one final thing. Underrated and overrated, Mr. He smells so good, doesn't he? Zach Knight, entrepreneur, London fashion icon, as you'll find out. Let's start from the top. Why did we sign Zach Knight?
Well, Martin O'Neill had a punch on for tall centre-backs, didn't he? And he liked...
Well, Gary Cahill was very tall, Chris Bird. What are you talking about?
Well, he also had Larson and he went and got Curtis Davis at the same era.
But why does he want to get another tall centre-back when he's got Gary Cahill?
I think he
wanted
a bit of backup, didn't he?
When he's got Gary Cahill. When he's got Gary Cahill. What's wrong with Gary Cahill, Bud?
Can't we do a Gary Cahill podcast?
No, what's wrong with Gary Cahill? Why did he get rid of Gary Cahill and bring in Zach Knight?
Honestly, fuck knows. There you go.
O'Neill's useless at developing players.
Because that's what I want to know. That's
why develop players when you can just spend money?
Yeah. Zat Knight was closer to being the finished article because he played a lot more games in the Premier League.
No, but hang on a minute. Now, people berate Mings because they say, oh, he's got a mistake in him every game. Zat Knight had at least 3 mistakes in him every game. He was known for having a mistake.
So this isn't such a question of why did we buy Zat Knight? This is why the fuck did we buy Zat Knight?
Yeah, pretty much.
Got you. Just putting that out there.
Why the fuck did we buy Zach Knight?
Honestly, David, God knows. God knows.
I just want to mention again, we had Gary Cahill.
So we had Gary Cahill, yeah?
We just said, let's give him to Bolton for $5 million. We need mistake-prone centre-backs instead to cover. Sorry, Zach Knight, if you're listening to this, but don't worry, we big you up later on.
Kind of.
But, I mean, what was he known for before? He was Fulham's man, was he not?
He was. He was indeed.
You still haven't answered the question.
It sounds like it was a rhetorical one in the end.
It'll go unanswered for the end of time.
It will. Put that one out to the public. Why did we buy Zat Knight? If anyone could give us a positive answer, you will be on the receiving end of some Zat Knight scented candles.
You get some candles for your troubles. We got him from Fulham. When you played Fulham, you didn't mind playing him because they had Zat Knight. I mean, he was 6'11" or whatever it was.
Yeah, 6'5". He never stood out, though.
Sometimes he was a little clumsy. Funny enough, one of the most defining moments when we played Chelsea at that time that O'Neill finally decided, I'll give Sean Maloney, since I bought Sean Maloney, might as well give him a game. Him and Carew partnered. And that I was like, fucking hell, finally he's trying that combination. Maloney scores 2 goals in the first half with 2-0 up, coming up to half time. And then Shevchenko fucking dives. Zach Knight gets sent off unfairly. Now, if he got sent off because he'd fouled him, you'd think, why did we buy Zach Knight? But he was innocent that time, and that's what turned that game into that ridiculous 4-4. That, you know, he got bad tempered in the end because people were getting sent off left, right, and centre, but just because of the injustice of what Shevchenko did. But we're digressing. It was an odd one. And it was typical of Martin O'Neill of just wanting to fill his team with Premier League experienced English players because he thought they were the ones that had the heart for it. And, you know, that was how he saw it, going against the grain of the evolution of, you know, more technical players.
It was like building a squad of squad players.
Yeah. No, and that's what he was, a squad player.
Although he did score on his debut.
Against who?
Against Chelsea in that famous one where Ellis held his hand out to shake old Abramovich's hand when he walked out in disgust. It was that game.
The one that got Mourinho sacked.
That was a good moment, that was.
Ellis's best moment, probably.
Yeah.
Got Mourinho sacked the first time round.
Yeah. Interestingly, when he actually signed for the Villa, it was probably more memorable than his actual Villa career. As on his the day he was due to sign for Villa and obviously be announced to the press, etc. He was caught.
This was the good bit.
He was caught up in a police raid and was basically held gunpoint in his mother's house.
This was on the day he signed.
Yeah, day of his signing. Because the police came to arrest his brother Carlos, who was later jailed for dealing heroin and crack cocaine and stuff. So in the end, he ended up sitting in, like, it was Aston Police Station, just around the corner from the ground. Ended up just probably walking down the road and signing his contract.
Yeah, he said, my mum's house got raided by gun police and I had guns pointed to my head. Then, that same afternoon, I signed for Aston Villa.
It must have been an omen.
Not the first or last player to be signed under gunpoint, I would imagine. I think that's how
Doug Ellis.
Doug Ellis used to sign his players, actually. If they'd ask for more, you'd open a little drawer in his desk and out a gun would come.
Maybe that's why we didn't get Muzzy, is it, really?
Bulletproof.
Yeah, he's bulletproof and we didn't get Janino.
So, yeah, I remember that, thinking, oh, have we just signed a gangster? Because what was it, like heroin, cocaine? Because his brother got done for it, didn't he?
Yeah, we went down for 6 years.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, Zat Knight then has to explain himself to the club saying, you know, I can't pick or choose my family. I'm not my brother, but...
But Martin O'Neill still thought it was a good idea to get him in instead of Gary Cahill.
Yeah.
Even though Zach Knight was trying everything he possibly could to prove this was not a good idea. Potential felon.
And then in the end, Zach Knight ended up at bloody Bolton anyway. Could have just cut out the middleman.
Exactly, yeah. ridiculous. For me, Zach Knight, sorry, we're giving him a hard time here, but probably best moments. I felt very sorry for him in that Chelsea game, which I just mentioned, yeah. where he fell to a real con job by Shevchenko. But his actual positive good moment was that equaliser against Arsenal when we started to think, oh, shit, we're slipping. Was it January, December?
It was Boxing Day.
Yeah, Boxing Day, when we started to think, oh, fuck.
He scored in front of the whole end.
Arsenal are going to win this and then suddenly, you know, get back in the race for the top four. And that goal was kind of vital at the time for keeping us believing.
And then we ended up fucking it up anyway.
Yeah, we ended up fucking it up anyway. But at least they didn't beat us on that day. But it was a good goal, actually.
It was a great goal.
But why? Why did we let Cahill go? he scored overhead bicycle kicks against the Blues. I mean, come on.
And went on to captain England and everything.
Yeah.
I'm not joking here by saying this, but I just remember when we played Manchester United in the FA Cup and we had, you know, Larson was, as per usual, injured. We had other injuries and we were basically playing Ridgewell and Cahill. And you were thinking, we're going to get absolutely mullered here. And those two, and they were both very young at the time. They were sensational. They were brilliant. And you're just thinking, fucking hell, hang on a minute. We've got two great centre-backs here if we play our cards right and bring them through properly. And Cahill would have got games because, hey-ho, you know, we had Larson as one of our first choice
centre-backs. And Melbourne was randomly playing right-back at that point.
Yeah. And if it wasn't for Corelli fucking up, I think it was Solskjaer that slipped it through his pyjama bottoms.
God, yeah.
And that was in the last minutes. And I felt really fucked off for basically Ridgewell and Cahill because they'd played their hearts out. Like, I don't know how old they were, 20, 21. Immense performances as centre-backs and undermined the last throw of the dice. And I was thinking, yeah, if Corelli hadn't fucked that one up, maybe Martin O'Neill might have had a bit more faith in those in Cahill instead of getting rid of him. Thanks, Martin. I'll just mention it again. Anyway, where is Zach Knight now?
Oh, yes.
First of all, he went off to Bolton. He only played 40 games, league games for Villa. He was kind of a fill-in, but I think he played probably more than he expected.
And then he had a good stint at Bolton, didn't he, to be fair?
Yeah, I think what did we get around 4 million? Probably, I mean, same amount that we paid for him, really, in the ballpark anyway.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we made a little bit of money on him, so it wasn't the worst piece of business.
But yeah, Bolton was the team he actually played for the longest in terms of, mm-hmm. well, the most appearances. He was at Fulham longer, but I think he had a good 5 years at Bolton. And they had a decent team in those days, didn't they?
They did for a while, didn't they? And I think they were... Would he have been part of the team that got relegated? I would imagine he was.
Yeah, it wasn't that decent.
They're decent by their standards.
But anyway, who cares about his football career after Aston Villa?
Because this is what it's all about.
He went to the MSL, played for the Colorado Rapids. Did he do a bit of coaching at the LA Galaxy?
Yeah, he got a chance to do a bit of coaching at the LA Galaxy, but you're burying the lead here. This is what you're doing.
No, I'm leading up to what happened because hanging out in LA was the key moment that he became one of the dynamic candle duos. Because Zach Knight, what did he do? Buy shares or helped out somebody he knew? I don't know how intimately. He basically bought into the business. He runs a fragrance company, basically, which the key products are scented candles.
Yeah, well, all those years, tight man marking, sweaty centre forwards, he made Zach Knight know what smells good, and it certainly wasn't them.
But, you know, you look at the press release, and it's the candles are called Cavaladon. Cavaladon is an uncompromised result of years dedicated to the artistry of scent. Long-term friends Amanda Wallace, an LA native, and Zach Knight of London form a shared bond through the sophistication of fragrance, design, fashion, and decor. Having crisscrossed the globe, uncovering exotic scents like Melberg's beard and Larson's armpits and studying the world, and it goes on, and they've played some somebody on Fiverr like £5 to bang up their press release.
I still haven't spent the royalties from what they gave me. It was
offering a truly transatlantic product, this fashionable duo. He wears suits now. They began collaborating in 2014, developing a line of luxury candles that blends their shared love of design, fragrance, and decor to gorgeous effect. It's beautiful. You couldn't make this shit up.
I do like the photo, though, with his rolled up sleeves on his blazer. Ah, it's very Duran Duran, isn't it?
Yeah, he's got like a rolled up sleeve silver jacket.
Slightly metallic. He looks like he's about to break into a chorus of Rio.
If that was a remake of Miami Vice, candle edition.
Let me carry on. Offering a truly sensual and sensuous candle experience, Calve Lalardon, or Nodlavac, if you speak it backwards, if you want to try to summon the devil, remains as stylish as its founders. He's stylish, that Zach Knight, with his metallic blazer. Each candle is handcrafted in Los Angeles, drawing upon the style inspirations of the Hollywood elite and Mabry fashion houses to ensure that every fragrance is fresh and international. Nothing smells more international than Zach Knight. Why did he get rid of Cahill and bring in this bloody fragrant candle maker?
The whole decision just stank, didn't it?
Yeah, that's the irony. The decision absolutely stank. Set Villa back years. Credit where it's due. I think it's a bit more legit than Julian Lescott's Fashion Emporium or... Gabby Abonglahor's.
Why can't they just go and open a pub like footballers
exactly.
used to?
Why can't they be like, is it Kevin Gage or
Phil King?
Yeah, Phil King. You know, and these are pub owners who've done it on the European stage.
Zach Knight, under or overrated? To be honest, I can't possibly cast judgment here because I haven't really smelt the candles yet. That could be a game changer. $35 a pop, though. They've got to smell pretty good.
I'll go underrated. I mean, it's not his fault, Martin O'Neill bought him.
Whose fault is it?
Well, it's not that. That's definitely not Zach Knight's fault. If you said, do you want to come play for Villa? Yeah, no problem. I mean, when he did play for Villa, he had less mistakes in him than he did when he played for Fulham Norwich, and he did score a couple of memorable goals, which is more than some people do.
I think Zach Knight was a little bit like David James when he came to Villa. Like, we knew he had a mistake in him, because that was the legend. But he actually played above par. I mean, David James played very well for Villa until the FA Cup final.
And both had questionable dress sense.
What are you saying, bud? I'll go the opposite to whatever you say.
I'm going to go under.
Right, he's overrated for me.
Probably right, to be honest.
Got to stick to my word.
I mean, how many players have we had that haven't even been particularly good and we somehow managed to make an ounce of profit on him?
Though, you know, these figures aren't exact. I think we didn't lose anything, Connor.
And to be honest, if he's anything like everyone else who... bloody O'Neill signed, he was probably on astronomical wages.
Yeah, but he's having a good life. This is the thing.
It's
interesting. From whether it's signing for Villa and having the excitement of the police pointing guns at you before you sign, they were probably saying, don't do that. They were probably Villa fans. Also, he's in good company, by the way. We're not actually mocking his candle making, because Anthony Hopkins, the actor, has also got a line of scented candles going on, but he charges like a fucking £100 or so for a bloody candle. But I'm still trying to work out why we got rid of Gary Cahill.
That's a podcast in itself, David.
Yeah. No, it's not, because we've already done it. We just did it now. Right, until please do follow on Spotify, Apple, all the apps that you listen to the show on or get your podcasts on. Please do also join the Mad Few in the Facebook group dedicated to the show. You'll find the link to that in the show notes. Also follow the Twitter address at My Old Man Said, which is a different one to the main My Old Man Said Twitter address, although it should be the main one, but it's a long story. Right, any final words? Liverpool next, 3 o'clock.
Saturday afternoon. What a novelty, eh? How the mighty have fallen.
Indeed. Phil can't wait.
Can never wait to play this, guys.
If we win that, then I think we can go to the beach then, I think. I think you would have my pardon. You could go to the beach, double over Liverpool.
flip-flops and towel at the ready.
No need for COVID vaccinations, Boris, for these guys. These guys are granted a pardon. They can go to whatever beach they want. They've just done the double over Liverpool. Thank you very much. Season's a good one. Right, until the Liverpool double, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.